This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy, and I'm here today with Liz and Sugu.
Hi, I'm Liz Rice. I'm technology evangelist with Aqua Security. I'm also this year's co-chair of KubeCon and CloudNativeCon, along with Kelsey Hightower. So I've been helping put together the agenda for the conference this week. And one of my tasks is to do some project updates about CNCF projects, including Vitesse. And Sugu's going to be joining me to talk about Vitesse.
Hi, I'm Sugu. I'm the co-founder and CTO of PlanetScale, which is a company meant to support and provide Vitesse as a service. I'm also the co-founder of the Vitesse project that we started in 2010, and I've been working on it since then.
Sugu, start with you. Why did you bring Vitesse to the CNCF?
Vitesse actually is a project that initially was benefiting only YouTube, but we thought that other people could benefit from it. So when we started it off initially as an open source project. Over time, other companies started noticing it, started taking over it. Even though initially, for the first 2 years, Vitesse was a bare metal project. At one point of time, Google required us to move everything into Google Cloud. We did something kind of unique, which is retain Vitesse as an open source project while still making it run inside Google's cloud. When this happened, Kubernetes came out, and we were ready for it right from day one because we were built for Google's cloud. It was just natural for us to then join CNCF because of the fact that it is for the cloud.
How difficult was it moving a project that you designed for one platform into somebody else's platform and having to make changes to keep it running?
Quite a challenge to make it run within Google Cloud because the Google ecosystem is very different. It has a lot of custom APIs that are only internal to Google, whereas the outside ecosystem is using a very wide range of technology. We actually had to build a large number of adapters so that they can work both for inside Google Cloud and outside. That is what actually helped us not only integrate with Kubernetes, but integrate with anything else that is out there. Like even the number of log servers that we use. We started off with Chubby, then we went to Zookeeper, Consul, etcd. We are able to integrate with all these external products because of all the interfaces we built.
If you were talking to another company who are now thinking of moving their software, their solution into the cloud, given your lessons of having to make that move to Google Cloud, what would you say to them?
I believe the cloud has actually made itself more usable now than it was a few years ago. And companies have to do much less now to move to the cloud than they used to do before. The biggest challenge has been data. People have been scared to move data into the cloud, mainly because of ephemeral instances. And also the cloud APIs are not out there yet where they recognize how data is present and is moved. That part is evolving. Some work is needed for data, but overall, if you have an application that you want to move to the cloud, it's a lot easier today.
Liz, you deal a lot with security and containers. APIs are a major worry for people because they've got APIs internally, but now they're being told to expose them, make them available. How much of an issue do you see this for customers when they suddenly find themselves in an environment where, oh, here's a set of APIs and you must use them?
When I think about the opening up of APIs and the security issues, particularly in the cloud-native world, this community has learned a lot and come a long way in the last year, 18 months. Even with the Kubernetes APIs themselves, having your API server open to the world, having your dashboard open to the world, we've seen high-profile cases where people have been attacked through those very, very simple-to-find entry points, an unsecured API, an unsecured port. Fortunately, over the last few months, the last few releases, we've seen a lot of much better defaulting the API server APIs to be TLS. Similarly, things like service mesh, making it much easier for people to secure the communication between pairs of workloads. That's really going to help people. It's going to make it much easier for people to build these individual services and just not have to worry about the security of the APIs between them because it's taken care of by the infrastructure. That's actually a theme of a lot of the cloud native projects, is abstracting away some of these complex things so that businesses can get on with what they really want to build for their businesses and not deal with these kind of nuts and bolts infrastructure issues like security.
We've really got three levels of APIs companies are having to deal with. We've got the platform APIs, which in theory should be secure, stable and available to everybody. We've then got any public APIs that a company wants to expose to bring partners in, third parties to work with them, but also private APIs. Where does a company start in its own APIs in determining how to secure them? Because many people have grown over time and won't really know where to start.
In the container world, I think we can think about APIs between different workloads and securing those workloads themselves. And if we know what's happening inside each container, and if we secure the communication between one container and the next, then that's going to make things much, much harder for any kind of attacker. One of the things that I find really exciting in the security world is runtime protection. It's something I came across when I joined Aqua. It's really this concept that you take a workload, particularly a microservice, you can reason about what that microservice should be allowed to do. It's only doing a small set of operations. It probably only should be accessing a small number of APIs. It should only be communicating with a small number of different services. If you can learn what those behaviours are like, then you can spot unusual behaviours. Not error behaviours, but anomalous attack behaviours. Like maybe you've got a microservice related to product search, and if it goes trying to get in touch with user-related service, that's probably a bad thing that shouldn't be happening. And that's something that runtime protection like Aqua can do, and spotting things like running as unexpected user identities or accessing unexpected files. It's really cool because you can just restrict that behaviour to what it should be and nothing beyond it.
Sugu, when you think back to your APIs, how much did you have to alter those APIs? How much rethinking did you do when you suddenly found yourself on a cloud platform and having to work in a much more public space?
That's a good question. I think most of the changes that we had to do for security came about when we had to move to Google's internal gRPC API, Stubby. We got lucky there because Stubby already had all the security built into it. So by just transitioning into using Stubby, actually Stubby and Chubby have security built into them. So when we moved into those APIs, Vitess actually also inherited all the features that they supported. And now in the open source, we are using gRPC, which is born out of Stubby. So it's all a happy world out there in terms of security.
I'm not sure happy is a word most IT managers would say when security comes up. If we take a slightly wider view of this, we're talking continually about being able to deploy microservices in containers as a sales movement. A developer creates a microservice, sells it on. A company creates microservices and gives them to its supply chain, be that customers, be that suppliers. But for all that, they still don't understand sometimes what security is or how to get it. How do we tell them that we're now at a state where they can trust container security?
There's a couple of projects under the CNCF that are really just directly related to this, the update framework and notary, which are related to signing these images and proving that the image you've got has the right signature. And not only did it come from the right person, but it's the right version. It's the latest version of what you're looking for. Another project in the community is Grafeus, which is related to metadata associated with an image. We've also done some work at Aqua on a project called Manifesto to do with how you might manipulate that metadata and using things like Grafeus to hold not just the provenance, but things like security scanning results. So you might scan the image for vulnerabilities, store that information in Grafeus so that it's inherently tied to that specific image. You know that that scanning report really is the report related to that image. So there's all these useful tools helping people establish whether they've got the right image. Then you also get things like admission policies to make sure that you can automate checking whether you've got the right image. Again, products like Aqua can do quite sophisticated things around admission policies, looking at what base image you started from, maybe whitelisting certain vulnerabilities, checking for things like provenance. There could be all sorts of rules you might set. You might have different rules for production compared to your test environment. The key thing as well is that automation is really important here. You can't conceivably think about manually patching in a container deployment and having these automated tools. I'm sure this week we're going to hear a lot about CI/CD and building security into that pipeline along with testing. It's what is needed to make this work.
That automation has become quite a challenge for companies. They hear a lot about it from a DevOps CI/CD perspective, but there's a big gap between hearing a lot, seeing tools appear, and actually the trust to do it. And part of the challenge seems to be that people still don't go down to a granular level, so they have a decision tree that has more than one outcome, at which point automation becomes very hard to track back through and prove. Where are we in the container space with people understanding that automation is the key to speed of deployment, speed of security, speed of application development?
We're definitely seeing more and more understanding of that and more embracing it. as we see Kubernetes taking off and getting adopted by more and more enterprises, it's going hand in hand with those improvements in processes, in DevOps, like bringing automation into the story. And I think we're going to hear from a lot of end users, some of whom have missteps along the way and have had issues along the way. I know we're going to hear some pretty good stories this week, which hopefully we can all learn from. These building blocks are gradually being put into place. The tooling is improving, not just in the open source world, in the commercial world. There's lots of people building enterprise-grade tools around CI/CD as well as security. There's a lot of pieces of this puzzle that you don't have to build for yourself. You can go to an expert and pay money to make it easy for yourself.
The one question I always had is, how do you balance ease of use against security? That's something that people that are used to go in and hack something in and get it out, I hear them complain, oh, now I have to do this, I have to package it, I have to push it there.
We talk about shifting left, shifting security left in the pipeline so that it doesn't become an afterthought. It's not something that a security person deals with the moment before deployment, but rather it's built into the pipeline. As an example, we see a lot of enterprises who might say, okay, we program in, let's say, Python and Java. Developers, here is a base image for Python, here is a base image for Java. We know what's installed on those images, we approve those images. So long as the developers stick within those rules of working from those images, they're fine. If they try to install some different packages, they're going to have a conversation with the security team about the fact that it's now failing the CI/CD pipeline. But it pushes the conversation much earlier in the process so that developers are talking to security people about their requirements and about the risks. And I think that's a good thing.
Signing becomes part of this as well. One of the challenges with signing is we've lost trust to some degree. We've seen several breaches that have led us to not trust signatures. How do we repair that? More importantly, how do we make companies internally sign their code? Because there's a whole different thing between somebody shipping something outside, signed, having a process. But then you look at this vast amount of code that's generated internally that is never signed. But actually, if we start to put everything in a container and move it around, we should be making signing integral.
Completely agree. Yeah, and it's all about ease of use, making those tools readily accessible so that the developer doesn't have to do anything special to make that happen, that it just automatically gets signed. We see this in the open source world. A lot of the time people have to put a signature when they push a commit into Git. It's an automatic part of the process and it's required when you contribute to certain projects. People understand that, they expect it. I think that's a move in the right direction.
Sugu, how did you find challenges around now signing with Vitess, but also scalability?
Signing, we were mentored by Chris from CNCF. He brought the whole signing piece into the Vitess project. Previous to that, we used to use the CLA model, but when we moved to CNCF, we moved to the signing model, which people initially complained about, but now they are okay with it. Yeah, scalability has been the biggest challenge in the database industry because so far people have managed to live with just one single instance. One machine dealing with all the data, and this data explosion is finally catching up to them. So far, they survived by just migrating some data out and keeping only the transactional core inside databases. But that doesn't work anymore, and now they are faced with the problem of how do I scale this out? And database systems till today haven't dealt with that problem. They said, well, figure something out for yourself. When we built Vitess, we didn't know that we were actually solving a problem that is coming because we started 8 years ago. We thought only companies like YouTube and Facebook's run at the scale. But it turns out now that every small and medium company easily outgrow a single instance MySQL. So there's a huge pressure now coming down where people are looking for a solution. And many of them are coming down to Vitess because it's the one that has been matured over the years. And they are finding that it's solid because it's battle hardened at YouTube. So it's pretty exciting time right now.
How much trust is there for people putting their databases into a container environment? If we think about virtual machines, we fought for years to convince people that they could actually put a database in a virtual machine, but they still create one virtual machine, one physical box, because they didn't want the risk of resources being taken by other VMs on the box. Containers are designed to be far more flexible, far more dense. Are you finding that DBAs and data people are becoming more relaxed, or are we still fighting that early education?
Oh, they are so scared, you won't believe it. Because this data is so critical, it's so mission critical, like analysis data, if you lose it, you can recreate it. This data, you lose it, your company is dead. So people are so scared of this data, and you see some of these outage reports that become big news, and they're afraid to move these things into containers because they just can't bear with the fact that something is ephemeral, that the cloud could come and shut down your container, and what do I do? Where did my data go? That fear has been there among users, and that's one of the reasons why databases have been kind of left behind in this move to the cloud. Now, with Vitess having run in the cloud and proven itself, a few companies actually took the bold step of trying it out on Kubernetes. And they've had great success, like JD.com, which recently became a platinum member of CNCF. They run Vitess at massive scale, over 1,000 KeySpace shards, which is the standard that we use, six-figure QPS. They actually launched it without even telling us. 8 months later, they said, oh, by the way, we are using Vitess at like large scale within this company. And there's HubSpot, there's Stitch Labs. Everybody is facing this challenge, facing the pressure. They see that they have to move the data to the cloud. They've moved their applications to the cloud already, and they are still going back out into bare metal for their data. It is a cultural change. And the other change that we are also pushing through Vitess is now that you can shard, you don't have to have these many terabyte size instances. Just shrink them down to 100 to 300 gigabytes and pack more of them inside a box. I was at GitHub and we were talking about a migration. They were saying, oh, we have this one server that we want to migrate to Vitess, and then we do some calculations. I think you'll be good with 64 shards. And the entire room went silent. And we just kept talking and nobody was talking. And we realized, don't worry. Yeah, 64 shards, but you don't need 64 servers. You can back like 20, 30 of them in single boxes. So it's something that's cultural change that people have to embrace.
What about orchestration? Because if we think about orchestration and containers, we tend to use it just to do a big mass deployment or to delete or to move things around. Orchestration with data is a much more sensitive thing. Have we started to understand the challenge of orchestration for data, or again, is that something we're slowly working towards?
Well, with Vitess, that is what it was built for. Most people that have deployed on Vitess have been super happy with it because of the orchestration it does. The reason why it is so good is because we had a rough time in 2013 when we moved Vitess to the cloud and we ironed out all these issues. The biggest one was the cloud will come and shut down your master node. And for a while, you can't serve traffic. You can't serve writes. So we had to build automation around immediately detecting that and electing a new master. There is something called semi-sync replication that we use, where every time a master accepts a write, that data is at minimum sent to at least one other replica, which means that you would never lose your data. And this is something that the MySQL world didn't even know about. They were more in the traditional pet mode, where a database just cannot go down, period. Now they're embracing this new semi-sync mode where the data is actually sent somewhere else. So when a node goes down, you immediately switch over. Now it's proven that that is actually pretty reliable because all these companies have deployed it at large scale. Not just companies that are running in the cloud, even companies that are now running in bare metal are adopting this new method where data loss is almost non-existent. And it also remains highly available because you can instantly fail over to a replica because it has all the data already.
That brings us back, Liz, again to security, doesn't it? Securing a container with a microservice that's small and going to be moved around a lot is one thing. Suddenly securing a huge container with all your corporate data or critical shard becomes something else. First of all, their size makes them easy targets, they're easy to identify. How do we reassure those DBAs that this is safe for that corporate data?
It's very important that everybody involved understands what containers are and what they're not. When you have multiple containers on the same physical machine or on the same virtual machine, they are sharing a single kernel. So if you have a kernel exploit that allows you to escape into containers or escape onto the host, and it's not that there are kernel exploits every day of the week, but they do happen. Meltdown and Spectre did happen. We have to concede that these things will occur from time to time. If you're sharing a kernel, there is a risk. I wouldn't want my bank account details on the same server in a container next to, no offense, but with your WordPress site. I just wouldn't want them to be on the same virtual machine because that level of isolation, it's not the same level of isolation as you'd get in a virtual machine. It's not the same level of isolation as you'd get if you were air-gapped. You have to pick the right solution for the right level of risk. But particularly if you have trusted entities, for example, different container components coming from the same team that are all part of the same product, having them running on the same virtual machine, yes, there could be a kernel exploit. Yes, you can't guarantee that nothing is ever going to go wrong, but you can reduce the risk. And arguably, because of the defense in depth that you can achieve with containers, we might be in a better world than we were with traditional deployments. Because you can still have the traditional deployment security measures. You can still have whatever traditional firewalling you have. You might have traditional IDS systems running, and that can carry on. But in addition, you can have these container-specific security measures, like the runtime protection, like network firewall between container instances, so micro-segmentation. It's extra layers of defense that we didn't used to have.
You said you're here talking about other projects, and we've kind of focused on just one or two things so far. Do you want to just give us a quick view of what the other projects are you're talking about this week?
Tomorrow I'm going to be doing an update on what's been happening in the CNCF projects since the last KubeCon and CloudNativeCon in December. So it's less than 6 months ago. In the last year, we've gone from 8 projects to 20. Got a lot to get through in a 30-minute talk tomorrow morning. We've got 3 new projects that have joined at sandbox level. We've got some projects that have moved up from sandbox level to incubation. We're going to see Kubernetes is a graduated project now, which is really big news in terms of saying this is an established product. It's ready for enterprises to use. It's a very strong signal of confidence in that project. There's lots and lots of new releases and new features that people have been bringing out across all the different products. There's projects related to identity, there's observability, there's the core components like the runtimes. There's things across the board in the cloud native spectrum.
That big jump in the number of projects is just the start point, though, isn't it? Realistically, if we look at how quickly you've accelerated in the next year, chances are you could be on 40, 50 projects by the time we get to Barcelona.
I hope I don't have to do the project updates. I think we might have to think of a new format for that.
Thank you both very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.